Well, tonight we are on miracle number 10. Miracle number 10. We're going to be preaching on Jesus the Sabbath breaker. Jesus the Sabbath breaker. We're going to look at three different gospels. We're going to be in Matthew, we'll be in Mark, and then we will finally settle in Luke tonight. But I want us to read through all three accounts of a man with a withered hand. Darrell asked me just a second ago, he said, "What miracle are you preaching on tonight?" I said, "The man with a withered hand." I said, "Lord, make my hand like my other one." You know, so that's supposed to be a joke, all right? So anyway, I hope that tonight as we talk about this miracle, that it'll be a blessing to you. I want us to read all three accounts. Let's go to the Gospel of Matthew first. Go to Matthew chapter 12, and we'll begin reading in verse 9. "And when he was departed thence, he went into their synagogue. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered." Now, we don't know how the man's hand was withered. We don't know if he was born that way or if he had some kind of accident. But we do know that his hand is withered, and that'll get a little more specific when we get to the Gospel of Luke. "And they ask him, saying, is it lawful to heal on Sabbath days, that they might accuse him?" Verse number 11. Matthew is the only one of the three Gospels that shares this particular part of the day. "Jesus said unto them, what man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep?" Now remember, they're probably going to have a flock. But he's saying, if you've just got one of your sheep, and if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold or take it and lift it out? How much then is a man better, or is how much more worth is a man than a sheep? Wherefore is it lawful to do well or to do good on Sabbath days? Then he said unto the man, stretch forth thy hand. And he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and held a council against him, how they might destroy him. Now, in our mind, we're thinking, why would they want to destroy a man that had just done something that good? Well, when people get things in their mind that they think's right, even if it's not right, it's tough to convince them that they're wrong. And these people had been so steeped in their religion that they had turned the Sabbath day into something that it was never intended to be. Go with me now over to the Gospel of Mark, and I want you to look with me at chapter 3. Mark chapter 3, and I want you to begin with me at verse number 1. "And he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there which had a withered hand." And then notice this, "and they watched him." And why were they watching him? Whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him. Accuse him of what? Of breaking the Sabbath. "And he said unto the man which had the withered hand, stand forth. And he said unto them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath days or to do evil? To save a life or to kill? But they held their peace." They didn't say anything. "And when he looked around about on them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts. He said unto the man, stretch forth thine hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored whole as the other. And the Pharisees went forth and straightway took counsel with the Herodians against him. Now, Matthew does not tell us who they took counsel with, but Mark does. Luke does not tell us, but Mark does. The Herodians were people that Pharisees normally did not even associate with, because they were loyal to Herod, who was an Idumean. He was not even a full-blooded Jew. He was considered to be a half-breed. But yet, because of their hatred, they were willing to put aside all of their bigotry, all of their prejudices, and come together with another group of people that hated Jesus. Why? Because they wanted to destroy him. Then look with me at the Gospel of Luke, chapter 6. Look with me at verse number 6. And it came to pass also on another Sabbath. In other words, if you looked up at the first part of chapter 6, there's a Sabbath that is mentioned. And in verse 6, now a week has passed, or at least another Sabbath has rolled around. And he enters into the synagogue and he taught. And there was a man whose right hand was withered. Matthew does not tell us it's a right hand. Mark does not tell us it's a right hand. But Luke, being a physician, he pays close attention to details. Now, in the Bible, if somebody gives the right hand, what is that a symbol of? It's a symbol of power. It's a symbol of strength. It's a symbol, really, of authority. When the Bible says that Jesus sat down, where does it say he sat down? He sat down at the right hand of God. And so, this man's right hand was the one that had been withered. It had shriveled up. There was nothing in it that operated. He could not really even function in society. Very few people would have probably given the man any type of employment because he would have been limited. So therefore, he probably suffered. His family may have suffered. If he had been born this way as growing up, he would have not been able to help his father in any type of shop or any type of field. If he was not this way at birth and it just happened through an accident, it would have probably even been even worse, because he would not have been used to not being able to make a living. I can't think of the number of times when I have had people, especially men that I have visited, maybe in a hospital, and they have been maybe big burly type guys where they've been able to just kind of do what they wanted to do, and then all of a sudden something happens and they're incapacitated. And it frustrates them to no end that they can't do what they used to do. And so we've got a man whose right hand, his power hand, is withered. Well, the scribes and the Pharisees watch him. They watching Jesus. Mark told us that they were watching him. And what are they watching him about? To see whether he would heal on the Sabbath day, that they might find an accusation against him. Ah, but he knew their thoughts. And he said unto the man which had the withered hand, rise and stand forth. The word stand forth would mean something like come forward. I can't help but think of an invitation, maybe on a Sunday when the house is full, and you give an invitation and you say, come on to Jesus today. And maybe Jesus looked and he sees the man and he says, come forward, come here. And so the man comes forth. He said, rise up, come forth. He arose, he stood forth. Verse number 9, then Jesus said unto them, I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath day to do good or to do evil? To save a life or to destroy it? And looking round about upon them all, he said unto the man, stretch forth thine hand. He did so, and his hand was restored whole as the other. All three accounts say whole as the other. And I want you to see the reaction. They were filled with madness. They commune with one another. They begin to confer with one another what they might do to him, what they might do to Jesus. And finally, after all of the commotion, Jesus leaves and he goes out into a mountain to pray, and he continued all night in prayer to God. Let me tell you a story that happened in Chicago 2 or 3 years ago. There was a 15-year-old boy in one of the neighborhoods of Chicago, and he got hit with some gunfire. He was not involved in it. There was crossfire between a couple of gangs, and this boy, who was just a bystander, he got hit. His friends picked him up, and they carried him to the ER, and they stopped about 35 feet from the door and laid him down. They ran inside, and they said, come help us. Our friend's been shot. And they said, it's against our policy to help anybody that's not inside the doors of the ER. And they would not go outside 35 feet to help. I don't know if the boy died or finally the friends went and grabbed him and brought him in. But can you imagine a hospital where that you were in a life and death situation? I mean, you're just about to bleed out, and they're maybe so tired that they can't go any farther. They're thinking, we're close enough. And then a doctor's standing at the door saying, I'm sorry, I can't walk 35 feet and help you. Well, the hospital has since changed its policies, and rightly so. But yet what we find is, we find a story that's very similar. Now, the man with a withered hand, he was not in a life-threatening situation. There's no doubt that the man had had a withered hand either from birth or from some distant injury. I mean, it had been withered. There was nothing fresh at all about it. I mean, it was drying up. But it was not life-threatening. I mean, perhaps he had to carry it with some type of bandage around his neck, and it would just be held maybe against his body. But his life was not threatened. But yet, was it not a good thing for Jesus to help him? But yet you've got people that were so entrenched in keeping the law that they were not willing to let him be helped without being critical of the person that did the helping. But yet Jesus said, if you have a sheep that falls into a pit, aren't you willing to reach down and pull him out, even though that would constitute work? How much more important is a man than a sheep? Oh, but they didn't see it that way. What they saw is they saw a Sabbath breaker, and we've got to do something, and we're going to try to destroy this man. Well, we were in Mark chapter 3. I want you to flip back there, and I want you to see just above chapter 3 at the end of chapter 2. All right? Now remember, your chapter divisions are put there by man. When Mark wrote his gospel, there was no chapter division dividing 2 and 3. But look with me at what we would classify as verse 27. Jesus said unto them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. Now let me ask you this question. All of you know the Big Ten, the Ten Commandments. You know, Moses looking like Charlton Heston coming off the mountain with the tablets, all right? Of all of the ten, which one would you think you break the most? Probably the Sabbath, break, not keeping it holy. We do stuff on Sabbath all the time. We cut grass on the Sabbath. You know, sometimes we clean a pool on the Sabbath. Sometimes we work on lawnmowers on the Sabbath. Sometimes we fix tires on the Sabbath. Sometimes we repair windows on the Sabbath. Can I tell you that when the Sabbath was instituted, it was supposed to be a positive and not a negative? It wasn't a prohibition. It was like God saying, hey, everybody needs some rest. It wasn't for us to have a day of a bunch of things you don't do. It was to have a day when you just didn't have to do anything. And so it was to be a positive and not a negative. But over the years, you don't find this in the Bible. You find it in the rabbinical traditions. There are over 600 laws that the Jews began to add that you could not do on certain days, most of them being the Sabbath day. If you were to do an internet search, you would find that there are about 39 different areas that rabbis have come up with that you are not supposed to do these things on the Sabbath day, or you're a Sabbath breaker. And underneath those 39 things, you'll find several hundred sub areas. Now, this would not be during Jesus' time, but this would be for the Orthodox Jews today. Do you know that there are rabbis that say you are not supposed to flip a light switch off on the Sabbath day because you know why? That constitutes putting out a fire. You say what? Just those types of little things. I mean, I've heard preachers say, those folks were so orthodox, they wouldn't even fry an egg on the Sabbath day. But yet Jesus said, if you've got a sheep in a pit, you're going to get him out. Isn't a man more important than that? And so Mark tells us that the Sabbath was not made for anybody except for man to really rest. And so it's supposed to be a fun day. It's not supposed to be a day of drudgery. And so as we're looking at our passage tonight in Luke 6, let me give you just kind of four thoughts and I'll be done. The first thing that I want you to notice is I want you to notice that there's a watching that's going on. Look at verse 7. You've got two groups of people, and they are, I mean, they're looking. I mean, this may be the first spy gate, all right? They're looking. They have another group of people called the Herodians, and they've known about some of the things that Jesus has done. And notice what it says. They watched him. They were observing him. You can almost see him kind of peeking around the corner, looking. And why are they watching him? to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath day. Do you know what they have acknowledged without acknowledging it? Without ever saying a word, they have acknowledged he's got the power to heal. They've seen it before, evidently. They've heard about it before. And so, they're watching to see. Now, you would think that somebody that was watching a man that had the power to heal people, you would think that would make an impression. Oh, but not with this group. These people are unteachable. They are so blinded in their religion. We're good. We're the sons of Abraham. And Jesus basically is going to rebuke them. But they're watching. They're not willing to let their pride be put aside. I can't even fathom this. That you've got a man that is able to take blind people and give them sight. And next week we're going to see how he takes a dead boy and raises him from the dead. He's got that ability, and what are they doing? They're trying to catch him to see how he's going to violate one of their laws. I can't even halfway comprehend that. And so they're watching. These guys are willing to swallow a camel in one gulp, but they're going to strain on a gnat. I mean, it's amazing what these guys can believe. But yet you have people that believe all kind of stuff. I mean, all you've got to do is just read a few comments on maybe an article talking about Jesus or talking about God or talking about being in heaven one day. You know, if the comment section is open, there's going to be somebody that just denigrates that. There's going to be somebody that talks about, oh yeah, you know, you Christians are delusional. But yet, whenever we have things happen, well, that's just a coincidence. But in our minds, we're thinking, what is wrong with these people? They are blind, and they're not willing to see. They are willfully lost. Not only is there a watching, but there are some beautiful words that are spoken. If you begin with me in verse number 8, you've got Jesus, and he knows their thoughts. And by the way, he knows our thoughts also. He knows everything that you're thinking about right now. He knows if you're counting the tiles on the ceiling. He knows if you're thinking about at 7:40, am I going to be able to get there in time to pick my kids up from the Kidsville Singers? He knows if you're thinking that right now. He knows the thoughts and intents of our hearts. And so, he's looking at them, and then he says these beautiful words to this man. Rise up. Stand forth in the middle of them. Come on forward. Got the invitation going. Come on. Come on forward. And verse number 9, he says, is it all lawful to do good on the Sabbath or to do bad? And in verse 10, he looks at the man and he says, stretch out your hand. Well, the guy did it. Are those not beautiful words? Man, when I've got a problem and I have no answer within me and Jesus comes through, oh, what that does for my soul. Now, I want you to notice in verse number 6 something. And it came to pass on another Sabbath, he entered into the synagogue, and there was a man there. I have a tendency to think that this man had been there before. It doesn't say that he had been there before, but to me it just seems logical that maybe he had been there before. I mean, he was just sitting there in the midst of them. He's just sitting there listening. And so when he's sitting there, whether he was there for the first time, he was from their community. You see, the criteria to have a synagogue, you had to have 10 families that had a male head. I don't have any idea how large the synagogue was here, but I know this, they had to have at least 10 families that had a male head. And you've got this man that's there in the midst, and so it's a close community, and so they know the man. Can I tell you something? When I find out a friend of mine is hurting, and then something happens and they get better, you know that makes me happy. I mean, it really does. When I hear that one of our people maybe has had some type of emergency surgery, and maybe we begin praying for them, and all of a sudden, a week later, man, they're back in the saddle again, and they're doing good. I'm just praising God for that. Why? Because they are my friends. This past Wednesday, I was in Mississippi. Brother James preached, did a marvelous job last week. Before the service, GW was having some pain in his chest. They took him to the hospital to get him checked out. I got a text message, and all of a sudden my thought was, I got to pray for my friend. And while I was in Mississippi, I'm praying for my friend. And when I heard that he did not have a heart attack, I wasn't going, well, that's just too bad. I wished he'd have had it. I wasn't praying that. I was praising God he didn't have it. I was happy that he was better. But not these folks. Let me tell you something. I'm happy when people I don't even know get better. But yet these folks, they've got a guy that's got a withered hand. His family is suffering. They haven't shown him any compassion. And then you've got a man that they know can heal him. They're watching him to try to catch him. Why don't they have compassion on him? Because religious people don't always have compassion. Do you remember the story of the Good Samaritan? What did you have? Oh, you had a Pharisee that walked by. You had a Levite that walked by. And what did they do? This guy's laying there over, beaten, robbed. Well, I don't want to get over there next to that guy. I got to get on the other side of the road. And they walked on the other side to get by the guy. Religious people don't always have the compassion that they ought to have. And so, the words of Jesus, stretch forth thy hand. And that man stretches his hand forth. Oh, and good things happen. Let me give you a third thought. There's wrath everywhere. Wrath everywhere. Look again at verse number 10. He knows their thoughts. He asked them a question. And so, we see a wrath from Jesus in the way that he asked this question. Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath or to do evil? Lawful to save a life or to take it? He looks around and he says, stretch out your hand. If you look back over, we won't really go to it, but if you look back at Mark chapter 3, the Bible says that he looked on them with anger. In other words, their attitude made him mad. I heard somebody say yesterday that God doesn't really look on sin. No, excuse me, it was Monday. We were having a class Monday night and we were talking and somebody made the statement. They said, well, God doesn't really look at sin. And I said, I disagree with you on that. So the Bible says that God is angry with the wicked every day. God sees evil and he don't like it. And Jesus looks into their heart and he sees that dark, bitter wickedness. No compassion on anybody whatsoever. Why? Because they're religious. And what does he do? He gets mad. Well, not only does Jesus get mad, but the religious people get mad. I mean, it starts to ratchet up a little bit. If you look at verse number 11, they were filled with madness. I mean, they were seething. They were seeing red. And they began to commune. That means they began to confer what they might do to him. It's hard for me to understand how they can be mad at Jesus just for doing good. I guess if I were going to maybe just use something that to me would be just as far-fetched, let me just use Brother James as an example. He's a soul winner, one of the best soul winners that I've ever known. Coming to church on a Sunday morning, hypothetically, he pulls into Hardee's, decides to get him a biscuit. He and Miss Melba go in. They get him a sausage biscuit, a cup of coffee. They sit down, and right next to him, there's a couple that's sitting there. They strike up a conversation, and the next thing you know, Brother James says something like this: "If you were to die now, do you know you'd go to heaven?" "No, I really don't know." "Well, you know, I could take the Bible and show you. Would you like for me to do that?" "Oh, that'd be wonderful." And so by the time he takes his Bible and maybe Miss Belba talks to the lady and he talks to the man and they get saved, all of a sudden it's 9:50. Well, he teaches Sunday school at 9:30. How pitiful and uncompassionate would it be if I said something like this: "Well, I can't believe you missed Sunday school at 9:30 just to win somebody to Jesus." Do you see how crazy that is? Jesus is doing good. I mean, he's doing good. He's just got finished teaching them. Nobody's ever taught like he's taught. But they're watching. And he says, "Put your hand out. I don't care what these jokers think. I'm going to do something good." And he heals the man. Doing good on the Sabbath is a good thing. It doesn't matter what those 39 areas and those 100 and something sub areas are. Do good, because the Lord of the Sabbath is above the Sabbath. Last thing is this. I want you to see the good work of God. Verse 10. The man stretches his hand and his hand was restored whole as the other. Can I tell you that the man came to the right place? You say, what's the right place? Wherever Jesus is at. He probably heard Jesus was going to be teaching that day. Everybody wanted to hear him. No matter where he went, people came to hear him because no man ever spake like he spake. And so he came to the right place. He also came to the right person. Nobody else there could do it. Nobody in his community had come forward to help him. Perhaps every once in a while somebody would throw a mite toward him. Maybe help him out with a few alms here and there. But Jesus gave him his life back. He gave him the ability to make a living again. He gave him what nobody else could give him. And so it was a good work of the Lord. And you know, this man pictures you and me. We're lost and undone by ourselves. Our hands withered. We can't save ourselves. But when the Lord comes in and he makes us whole. Is that not what Jesus said when he said, they that are whole need not a physician, but they that are sick? Well, when you're sick and Jesus makes you whole, hey, it's all better. It's all better. By coming to where Jesus was at, the man admitted that he had a need. And nobody ever gets saved until they admit they've got a need. Not only that, by coming, he let everybody know he believed in Jesus' power. When Jesus said, come on down the aisle, he could have stayed right there and he would have not been healed. But he come and stood in the midst and he stretched forth his hand because that's what Jesus told him to do. He believed in Jesus' power, and by coming, he was obedient. Now, let me just close by saying this. And I wish this thought was original with me, but it wasn't. It came from G. Campbell Morgan. G. Campbell Morgan said this: when this man's hand was healed, it was not healed to wrap up and to show off when he would go to a certain place saying, hey, let me show you my hand. And then wrap it back up until he went somewhere else. Hey, let me show you my hand. The reason that Jesus healed the man is so that the man could be restored for work, to do what he was supposed to do. And when Jesus saves us, he doesn't just save us to sit. He expects us to do something. And so Jesus, he broke the Sabbath. But let me tell you something. When you make the Sabbath, you can break the Sabbath. Jesus, nobody like him. Nobody. It doesn't matter if it's a blind person, a dead person, paralyzed person, or a withered hand. He can take care of it. He can take care of it. Well, thank you for being here tonight. Let's stand together.